Shavuos HaRosh Hashiva. So, getting close to Yom Kippur. I'm the servant of Gadol. I don't want to do anything wrong. So, Rosh Hashiva asked me to come speak. I have no choice. Call in the servant of Gadol. Everybody tells me to do. So if I have to, you have to also, by the way, for the rest of you. But please, that's why I'm here. So it's almost Yom Kippur. And everybody is wondering, I think at this point of year, there's a certain amount of confusion. What are we supposed to be doing? Okay, we all know the intensity of the Qumrah. We all know that it's supposed to be, there's something's happening. And the difficulty is in identifying, because there's so many things. There's tshuva, kabbalah, la'abo, trying to get better, trying to improve in our mu'akom, in our mu'akom, trying to figure out, okay, exactly where do we start? So I heard Rosh Hashanah Shadron was walking years ago in Yerushalayim. Rosh Hashanah was walking, and he, somewhere years ago in old Yerushalayim, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, he smelled something terrible. He was walking along, and he smelled something terrible. So as he, the closer he got to the direction, it started to smell worse. So he kept walking in that direction, and he saw that there was an open city cesspool. A terrible smell coming from the cesspool. And Rav Shalom was walking towards it, and the closer he got to the cesspool, the worse the smell became. And as he got there, he's curious. We want to see, let's see what's doing. Why does it smell so bad every once in a second? So he looks over looks down into kind of a pit of some sort. He sees there's a broken city cesspool, and there's sewage is spilling out, and it's a terrible, terrible stench. And he sees there are three Arabs, city workers. They're down there in the cesspool, and they're working on it, trying to fix up the, what do you call it, the thing. And they're working on it, they finally get out of the tight, and there's sewage all over the place. And finally, after about half, he's watching a few minutes, he's watching them. And the guys finally finish, they manage to close off this what do you call it. And one of them looks at his watch, and he grunts to the other one. And the three of them sit down right on the side, right in the cesspool over there. They sit down, and one of them pulls out a bag with his lunch. And they pull out a lunch with some hummus and some bread, and sitting there right in the cesspool, they sit there dipping in the hummus and with the coke, with some, what do you call it, with the za'atar, and they sit there in the cesspool eating their lunch. Rav Shalom said he was nauseated. Because they're sitting there, you could barely breathe, they're sitting in there, what do you call it, eating their lunch in a cesspool. He said he learned from this a tremendous lesson. He said a person basically can get used to any situation. If you live in a cesspool, you can get used to this. Okay, there are Arabs, it's a different Bria, I agree with you. I don't know what their homes smell like also, I don't know. But they're sitting in a cesspool. He says, the Musar lesson, a person can get used to anything. You can be sitting in a cesspool, and you're used to, you're conditioned to it, the smell doesn't bother you anymore. He said, that's exactly what happens to every human being. Every human being, in a situation where you become conditioned, you become complacent. This is the society, this is the cesspool we live in, and a person forgets where they are, a person forgets that this is where we are, this is what we're used to, this is what we're conditioned to, this is where we're holding. Because a person has to wake himself up at a certain point and remind himself, you're in a cesspool. A person could be walking through where this is the world we live in. So I get to this point of the year. I was once in England, years ago, I was in England, for the week before Rosh Hashanah. So I was staying in somebody's house, and I had to go daven Shabbos morning. So there they start davening usually by the time we're finishing here, when they're starting. There's the late over there, they're davening in what was considered early in England. They're supposed to daven about 8:30 in the morning. 8:30 in the morning, here we're in the middle of Chomp. They're very 8:30 first of all. So I stayed by something. I even slept late that morning. Shabbos morning, I slept late till about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I slung it. And then I decided, I'm already up. I'll go into the basement to learn until davening starts. So I walked down there to the 300, and they told me beforehand there's a code on the door that you push the numbers on the code. So as Rabbi Girl Weinstein said, confidence is the feeling you have before you realize what the problem actually is. And so I went over there, and they asked me, "Do you know the code? Do you know the guy?" I said, "Yeah, I'll be able to handle it." And of course, I was locked out. I'm pushing the button, something. Okay, I'm standing out there, right outside the JLE, the Orson Mann branch in London. And down the alley, there's this little Sephardi shul. And I look down the alley. There's a little old man with a cane, and he's banging on a door over there. So there's a shul down the alley over there, and he can't get in. He was locked out. He's going around, and he couldn't get into the shul. So he turns to me and he yells to me in Hebrew. Says Masha. My wife thought I spoke Hebrew. Yells at me in the middle of in London. He yells to me Masha. So I said to the guy, I said, well, I left the house. It was about 7:45. By the time we entered, I said, it's about 5 to 8, 8 o'clock. So the guy said to me, Loyakaliya, because the shul's supposed to start at 8:30, the door should be open at 8:25. He says, it's already 8:25, they should be open. He's pulling on the door. So I said, well, I'm Gufaraya, apparently not. He says, no, your watch is wrong. I said, okay. So we walk around together, two of us are commiserated, we're both locked out. And we walk around the front of the building, right across the street from the Orsmat Ranch, there's a big church. And the church has this huge clock. And I point up to the clock on the church. And it's about 2 minutes to 8 on the thing. I said to the guy, he looks up, he points with his cane, he says, that's wrong also. So I said, maybe last Sunday, so some guy is parked on the street over there. So I walk over, I said, excuse me, sir, what time is it? He goes, oh, 3 minutes to 8, mate. So I said to him, he looks at me, he goes, Gamshalozalonathon. And he storms off to the back of the building. So I'm thinking to myself, I feel sorry for the guy. It was a week before Rosh Hashanah. Thinking to myself, a guy who thinks that in a city of 50 million people, he's the only one with the correct watch, and everybody else's watch is wrong. This is a guy who's going to have trouble being modal emes and fixing up the flaws. This is a guy who's going to have trouble identifying what needs it. If everybody's wrong and I'm right, then he's going to have a lot of trouble identifying. This is a guy who's going to have trouble. And right before Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, he's going to have a little problem. So I started pacing back and forth, and I was walking back waiting for somebody to come. And this became my Rosh Hashanah shmooze. I figured, okay, hey, this is a great thing. And I'm pacing back and forth for about 15 minutes. And I've got this whole thing worked out. And at a certain point, I stopped. I glanced up at that big clock on the church. It was stuck on 3 minutes to 8. It was still 3 minutes to 8. That clock was talking wrong. That clock was talking wrong. And just as I noticed it, this guy comes. He also noticed it, apparently, because he just came around the building. And he's waving his cane excitedly. He goes, Ataroet Tzedakti! Tzedakti! He's waving his cane. And he's got the one clock in all of England that agreed with him. The guy was so excited. It was unbelievable. Okay, so then I had to be modal at MS. Then I had to be modal, and that just shows you by them, in that religion, even their clocks are sheker. So I had to learn to be modal. So you come to this point of the year, you can't play around. This point of the year, say, this is it. This is do or die. We're at the point of do or die. The Torah says that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would go in, so everybody knows the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, and if he wasn't really, he would die. Didn't die in the Kodesh HaKadoshim necessarily. He wouldn't live out the year. The Yerushalmi says he used to tie a string to him, tie a rope to him when he go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so if they heard a thud, they could pull him out. I always wondered what happened to the next Kohen Gadol. Well, he goes in, then you send in another guy. Okay, put the rope on. Well, I'm not feeling so well today. Second guy doesn't want to go in either. They would send in the second guy now. I don't know what was going through his mind. If he didn't die in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so they would live out the year. He wasn't Roy. He wouldn't live out the year. What if he did? So it's brought down, Chazal say, the next year he didn't wear the same clothing as he wore the previous year. The Kohen Gadol went in the next year. The clothing that he wore from the previous year on Yom Kippur, he was going to use those clothing. And then he put on new clothing. Why? Why did he wear it? If you already got them, why not save it? Why you got to go spend new money on new clothing for the new year? Why? The answer is, and this is something you hear people even say. People say it b'fe molech. And if they don't say it, they at least think it. Last year we heard the Shavuzin, and last year we heard about Tshuva, and last year we heard about Yom HaDin. And people think, well, I made it through last year, it must have been okay. If I made it through last year, I'll make it through this year too. What's the big deal? Last year I wasn't an angel either. I know what Levi Yodea Maris Nam, I know exactly what I did. I wasn't a Malach last year, and I made it through. So I'll make it through this year too. Because I'll say, no. The Kohen Gadol was Gonez, the Forshim say he was Gonez the clothing, that he himself should not be overconfident and think, well, you made it through, you'll make it through this year too. You made it through, yeah, you'll be okay. Oh, you'll be fine. If you wore the clothing, he'd be thinking to himself, this is the clothing I wore last year on Yom Kippur. I lived through the year. I'll wear it this year too. So intentionally, that he should not become complacent, that he shouldn't take it for granted and just assume, yeah, he's going to make it. He did not wear the same clothing the next year. It's something a person has to realize that at this point of the year, he's also, yeah, okay, we'll be okay. Maybe. We hope. We certainly hope. The Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves Mishpat. You know what Mishpat is? Mishpat is justice, strict justice. Ani Hashem ohev Mishpat. People think, yeah, God will forgive. You know, God understands. You know, me and Hashem were like this. You know, He understands my Yetzirah. You know, we'll be okay. So imagine the following. Imagine a woman, Erev Shabbos. 10 minutes before Shabbos, a woman's getting everything ready for Shabbos. And 10 minutes before Shabbos, she's just getting the last things ready in the kitchen. And she's drinking her last cup of coffee. And she stumbles and manages to spill the coffee, goes flying up in the air and spills right on her pan of chicken. Right 10 minutes before Shabbos. So now the woman's upset. So what she goes running to the local posek. And you know, he says, Shishim, it's not Shishim, it's hot, it's cold, and yom, and asks all the questions. And he looks at her, he says, well, based on what you're telling me, the chicken is trafe, you gotta throw it out. So the woman says, in 1 second, I got a house full of guests coming for Shabbos, what am I gonna serve gefilte fish and serve dessert? You know, that's not gonna cut it. I'm sorry, based on what you're telling me, it's not acceptable. She says, yeah, but one of my guests is my mother-in-law, you know, I mean, it's very embarrassing. She says, I'm sorry, you can't throw it. And the woman says, well, I'm gonna be very humiliated. She said, I'm sorry, that's not allowed. And she bursts out crying. The Pesach says, ooh, you're crying. I didn't know what you were so upset. You know, if you're crying, then it's okay. Then you didn't kosher, you didn't eat it. Right. So first we say, what we say about such a Pesach? What a compassionate Pesach. Now that's a rough one. That's a compassionate Pesach. That's a Misali Pesach Torah. That's a versus a Russia. That's a versus should be thrown out of Klal Yisrael. That's a Misali Pesach. Compassionate Pesach. Compassionate Pesach is a Pesach who will leave no volume unopened in trying to see if there's a legitimate heter. A compassionate posek is somebody who will stay up day and night trying to learn a pesugya to see if maybe kof that there or others, maybe he could find a heter somewhere. But he's not going to go and make up a heter. There was a case in the United States. A woman, a man was in the United States Air Force. And his plane, he was a Jew, was in the American Air Force. His plane crashed somewhere in the desert, Nevada, Arizona, wherever it was. And they didn't find the plane. They couldn't find the plane. They couldn't find the bodies. So they went to Ramesha Feinstein. They asked Ramesha Feinstein, what's it then? Ramesha said, based on the available evidence, his wife's an Aguna. His wife's an Aguna. Never found the body of the wife's an Aguna. So he passed her an Aguna. 4 years later, the phone rings in the people's home. Somebody answers the phone. Hear a voice on the other end of the phone. Hello, this is Moshe Feinstein. I've been in constant contact with the United States military for the last 4 years. I just got word from them today. They found the plane. They found the bodies. Now she's allowed to remarry. Because that's a compassionate person. That's a compassionate person. Compassionate person isn't somebody who goes and makes things up. Compassionate person isn't somebody who cares. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't going to stand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal say, first he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a veteran. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will overlook. So Chazal say his own life will be overlooked. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't overlook. I can't ni Hashem ohev mishpat. We're straight over here. And therefore, there's a din, and the din is overwhelming. We don't like to think about it. It's a frightening thought. We don't like to think about it. Part just thinking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the koch of life and death in his hands, and being a little afraid, and being a little nervous at night, Erev Yom Kippur, getting a little bit nervous, just a little bit nervous, but hey, after all, it is Erev Yom Kippur. That's a tremendous swiss. That itself is a swiss that could save a person. Because that means a person, if you're nervous, that means you believe there's a judge, you believe there's a king, you believe there's a dying, you believe that he can give life, and you believe that he can be the executioner. That itself is a schus. That right there is a schus. That itself can help a person to be zofet in Yom HaDin. We had a guy once, when I was in high school, years ago, I was out of high school, but I was an assistant coach. And they had a yeshiva team, they were playing. So the guy, they're playing a team that was made up mostly of B'nai Cham, descendants of Cham. And we should have beaten these guys. We were much better than these guys. Much better. And we're having a lot of trouble with them. The guys are having trouble. For some reason, they're having trouble. We're in the fourth quarter. You know, we're up by about 2 points, 4 points. Very close game. And it could have gone either way. With about 2 minutes, 3 minutes in the game, the other team, the coach, calls a timeout. And, okay, finish the timeout. They go out, play about 30 seconds. After 30 seconds, he calls another timeout. He yanks the starters. He puts in the substitutes. And we won by about 10, 12, 14 points. So after the game, I went over to the guy. I said, why did you yank the starters? So we had a game going over. Why did you pull your starters? Why don't you close the game? Could have gone either way. So the guy said to me, I'm Moser Zog. He didn't even know what he said. He said, look, I called a timeout, and I called a play. During the timeout, I called a play. Not one of the five guys did what they were supposed to do when they went back out on the court to run the play. Not one of the five guys went where he was supposed to go or ran the play the way he was supposed to. See, I didn't care about the game. These guys got to learn once and for all. They got to learn to take instructions a little bit. They didn't do what they were told to do, so I yanked them. First thing I say, no, Chris Roman gives a person a role in life. Everybody's got a role in life. You know, Chris Roman called the play. And a person's sent out to do what he's supposed to do. And at any point, if Chris Roman could call a timeout and yank all the starters, he could yank the entire team. Chris says, no, it's serious. Chris says, no, there's a certain amount of COVID rush that we go into. Okay, we heard the schmoozing and we heard the preparation. Oh, let's get it over with. Let's get the circus all ready. Player. But there is a Yom Kippur and there's a Yom Adin, and it's something that it weighs heavily. So what do we got to do tshuva for? Okay, let's do tshuva. Okay, here we go. Let's do tshuva. Now let's do tshuva. So what do we got to do tshuva for? So I heard once there were two ladies from England who they were involved in some sort of traumatic experience, a traffic accident, something happened, and they went to a doctor. They were so rattled emotionally. The doctor said that they had, I made a bracha before, the doctor said that they had to go off to get away. They needed to get away from everything for a few days, and just get away from everything. So the two of them rented a chalet in Switzerland. They flew off to Switzerland. They were in this chalet for 10 days. Two women alone with no telephones, no husbands bothering them, no kids bothering them, all by themselves, all alone, beautiful, 10 days. After 10 days of relaxation, they go back to the airport to fly back to England. And when they get to the airport, the lady at the counter takes a look at their kid ticket. She says, I'm sorry you can't get on the plane. Says, why not? Because your tickets are for Tuesday, and today is Wednesday. So they started giggling. They were so relaxed and so comfortable out in this chalet in Switzerland, they actually lost track of time. It happens in yeshivas once in a while also. You know, some of the guy goes to sleep Wednesday, and he goes to sleep Wednesday morning, shows up Friday, and Thursday is unaccounted for. Somehow, he got lost in the shuffle. So they asked to have, what do you call it? A guy told me recently, I asked the guy, I came into Shir in the yeshiva, different yeshiva. I came in the morning, I said to the guy, Sunday, I said to the guy, did you take a nap yesterday? Shabbos, it was Shabbos. I said, did you take a nap? He said, yeah, I had a good nap. So how long did you sleep? Where is it? 5 hours. 5 hours? It's not a nap. 5 hours is not, 5 hours is a coma. 5 hours is not a nap. There are people in this room who don't sleep 5 hours a night, and probably not 5 hours in a week. You know, you took a 5 hour nap, a 7 hour nap, a 14 hour nap. Some guys take a year long nap. You know, they're long naps. These two women slept. They were so relaxed. They actually lost track of time. They lost track of the day. And Nimela, they missed out. They ended up at the airport a day later. And they're laughing and giggling and thinking, oh, this was wonderful. How relaxing. And all of a sudden, one of them goes, well, 1 second. She goes, what happened? She realized that they lost track of time. So they had spent all day Shabbos cooking and cleaning Lichvod Sunday. So they went and sent somebody to Rav Yashiv. How do you do tshuva for such a thing? How do you do tshuva for such a thing? You know, I went to, imagine all the fill of Shabbos. These are two ladies. It's like a couple of guys who prepare for Shabbos. You grab salami, throw it on bread. You know, if ladies do it, they do it right. You know, they're cooked and cleaned and everything else with a vacuum cleaner and everything. You know, and what do you do now? So Yashiv said, all right, they have to start some sort of Shabbos awareness, shiurim, something. Seder, Maisa Shahai. But why did it happen? Why did it happen? That's the real question. Why did it happen? There are plenty of people who wouldn't have happened to it. Do you ever, when you're growing up, there's always somebody on the block, there's always a kid on the block, who they used to describe as accident prone. Everything was, he's accident prone. He's always either had a splint, or he was on crutches, or a stitch, or a broken something. He's accident prone. So what they call accident prone, we call avil d'chayah. That's what accident. Of course, he's accident prone. When you jump from one table to another, right? Or when you swing from one tree to another, or one chandelier to another, accidents happen. The kid who sat in the library, he never had crutches. This guy was accident prone. He's always jumping from desks. He was never on a horizontal surface. He was always moving vertically up, one way or another, this accident prone. So I found in my experience, there are people what I call halachically accident prone. There's always somebody walking into the room on Shabbos. He walks into the bathroom. Oops! I always hear an oops. Somebody walks in. Oops! And sometimes you even get one of the doubles, right? Oops, oops, a double oops. If you want, just walk into the room. You know, why didn't you have, there's some homes you walk into, every time you walk into the home, the light's either on or off, and all you hear, all Shabbos, all year long, all the Shabbos, oops, oops, and otherwise that guy's stuck there, he's so traumatized. Oops, 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 oops. You know, why does it happen? And I guarantee, I want to tell you something, it sounds funny. It happens, look, I can guarantee you, that every single person, and sometimes it's hard, you listen, there are light switches all over the house. I can guarantee you that you can get next Shabbos without flipping a light switch. I guarantee you. No question about it. If I would pay you $50 to get through next Shabbos without hitting a light switch, you would do it. I'm sure you'd do it, because you would either take down all the light switches, or you would tape your hands to your sides, or you would sabotage the electric supply of the city. But one way or another, if it's important enough to you, you're going to get through. You're not going to hit that light switch. And then there are other people, okay, it was an accident. What can I do? Guy sits down to eat something, and then afterwards, oh, I can't believe it. It was real cheese. I didn't know. I thought it was imitation. It was a real cheeseburger. I thought it was imitation cheese. It did say, I mean, the package, it said O-R on the package, right? I thought O-R stands for Orthodox. Why, what happened? The answer is that people are halakhically accident prone. Why? Because they don't care. You see, halakha talks about a guy, his suffix whether he benched or not. Because that person is a suffix whether he benched. Right? What do you do? Suffix the rice, the suffix the rabbana. Do you bench again? You don't bench again? Get a suffix if you bench? I mean, let's say you did bench. And you have a suffix? I mean, that must have been a humdinger of a benching. If after you bench, you have a suffix if you bench. That you have a suffix? Yeah. Rabbi Victor Miller once said, it's a good idea. It's a good idea after you bench. Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the food, too. After you bench. We're so busy benching. Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the food. You don't remember if you bench? Okay, so, Seder, we're not Malachim, and Halacha talks about everybody in the room is forgotten. Yalaviyahu at some point. Just yesterday, I had to go back to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei because of HaMelech HaKadosh. Someone in the shul was kind enough. When he hit HaMelech HaKadosh, he yelled loudly, HaMelech HaKadosh, which normally annoys you. In this point, I was like, ooh, HaMelech HaKadosh. Oh, right. Did I say it or I didn't say it? And again, if I did say it and I don't remember that I said it, then that must, Hashem, you're the king. I don't remember. Did I call you king or I call you Kelly? We're talking about Hashem after all. So the Allah is here. I have a suffix. You go, say it. So I quickly, I went back. Everybody was in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. It wasn't that embarrassing. It wasn't like at the end. I was on by the first three brothers. So it wasn't as embarrassing as it could have been. But sometimes you get other people, guys in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, I'll say he's got a suffix. I said, I tried to make a bracha. I was supposed to say Bonei Yerushalayim. Instead of Bonei Yerushalayim, I made a Bori Pri Hayis in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Now what do I do? Why did you end up there? Where were you? Where were you? Miles away. Okay, it's one thing you didn't know. You got confused on the bracha. You made a Bori Pri Hayis in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. You know, there are certain things that even we can't help you. You've got Bori Pri Hayis in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Take a bite out of your own head, right? Because you've got an apple up there. That's what you've got it for. Bori Pri Hayis in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Why does it happen? Because he's halakhically accident prone. Where does that come from? He doesn't care. So a person understands that part of the avoda is, okay, we're not perfect. We're doing it all day. We're bound to make mistakes. But a little bit to care. A little bit that a person cares. If a person cares a little bit, amazing how few things happen wrong when a person shows that he genuinely cares. It's important to know what a guy told me, a bacher told me, what was his Kabbalah from last year? But he made a Kabbalah in the course of the year, Rosh Hashanah last year. What was his Kabbalah? A beautiful Kabbalah. You know what his Kabbalah was? His Kabbalah was to be more medactic, simply to be more medactic in the Tilis Yadayim. He's more medactic, but he washed it. Make sure he washes still here. Make sure he does it three times still here. That was his Kabbalah for the year. You know what a Kabbalah like that is? It's not a big deal. You're washing anyway. It'll take you exactly another 2 seconds to do it. But you know what ends up happening? You're careful about washing. I mean, Mela, somebody's careful about washing. So chances are you're going to make the bracha. You're thinking about what bracha you're going to make also. And since you're careful about not only this and that, chances are you're careful about how you make a motzi, you're careful about how you bench, you're careful about how you daven, and you may let everything else in the group. But at least something. At least to show some concern, some care. That's one example. It's just one example. There are other things we have to do too. I don't want to be marish on this point. There are other things we have to get to. But there's one thing that came from Eliashiv. There was a certain high school. They asked for Eliashiv of Shaila. There's a boy that they were picking on in the high school. It happens, usual stuff. They're picking on somebody in high school. And the boy asked them not to. He had a nickname, whatever it was, they're picking on him. They're making fun of him. And eventually, he had a complete breakdown and had to be institutionalized. And they've gone too far. So then they came to, at that point, they realized, you know, we've gone too far. They sent the delegate, they sent somebody, goes to Eliyashiv. Now, how do we do tshuva for this? How do we do tshuva? We put a boy in an institution, we broke him. How do we do tshuva? So Eliyashiv said, well, he's not of sound mind right now. You have to ask Mechila. And he's not of sound mind. So what you have to do is you have to wait. After Me'eva Esrim, you have to go to his kever, and you have to ask for Mechila. So they said to Eliyashiv, yeah, well, but what if we may have an Esrim before he may have an Esrim? You know, then what? Interesting question. So Rabbi Yashu looked at him, he just went, you know, should have thought of that sooner. Should have realized it's a problem. You see Chazal talk about, for instance, go ask Mechila, you have to go to a kever for Sunday, Chas Yisholm, to ask him for Mechila. Should have thought of that sooner. And therefore, first he has to realize, time to do a little introspection. Ben Adam Lamakom, Ben Adam Lachavero, a little bit of Mavri Al Midosa, the Shari Tshuva says that at this point of year, the greatest chus that we could have is on Kol Mavri Al Midosa. Chazal say Kol Mavri Al Midosa, Mavri Al Malakom Shal. Person overlooks the wrongs that people did to him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu overlooks his Averis. Call it my Rabbi Dosa, my very long folk shah, verse that overlooks a little bit. Bezeh, Pesach, Tikva, Nechbad, Me'od. That's what the Shari Tshuva says. That's a glorious ray of hope. Because the person thinks, well, my davening isn't so great, my learning can improve, but I don't know. Hey, my Rabbi Dosa, don't be no mockery. Somebody grabbed the piece of food you're going to grab in the lunchroom, you don't have to make an issue out of it. Somebody sat on your bed, you don't have to make an issue. All the things that are made issues out of, and more. Call my Rabbi Dosa, my very long folk shah. There's a buffer in the yeshiva. There's a bunker in the yeshiva the bunker came sliding down a railing in the yeshiva. Came zipping down a railing, came sliding down a railing, which happens in yeshiva, that's what railings are for, because they're not the end of the world. Came sliding down a railing, and at the base of the bottom of the railing, there's a little old man standing there. He plows into this old man, and he knocks him over. Well, it felt terrible. It turned out it was Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. It felt even worse. So, yeah, I mean, imagine, you knock over to Gadol Hador on a railing. So, just think about that a little bit. That's enough. Just thinking about that is enough to get you a kapora. Okay? So, you know, Ramesh, you get the buffers, plus you're paralyzed. I mean, how would you feel? You pray, you don't even know, what do you do? You apologize, you're absolutely paralyzed. I was told this by an eyewitness. Ramesh got up, and before the buffer could say anything, Ramesh grabs his hand, and he says, I'm so sorry, I don't normally stand over there. I normally stand on the other side of the corridor. I'm so sorry, I was blocking the way down. I'm blocking the thing. So the Bacher, you know, we all know this is ridiculous. He couldn't even find words to speak, and Rabbi Yishev wouldn't let him talk. Rabbi Yishev just kept patting his head and said, I'm sorry, I apologize. I listen, next time I'll stand on the other side. He turns around and walks away. So the Bacher said, you know, they're ridiculous. The next day, he sees Rabbi Yishev coming down the hall, and Rabbi Yishev coming towards him, and he does the Bacher says, okay, now I'm going to give you 24 hours to recover a little bit. I mean, I magia a little bit of Musser. So Rabbi Yishev, now he's going to let me have it. So Rabbi Yishev comes walking straight towards him, and the Bacher's getting ready, okay, let's hear it. And Rabbi Yishev takes his hand again, he says, listen, I'm terribly sorry, really, I'm going to try not to do that next time. I feel so bad about what happened yesterday. Ridiculous. Right? Rabbi Yishev came over every day for 2 weeks to ask the Mechila. Bacher's going out as Caleb. Rabbi Yishev came over every 2 weeks to ask him a Mechila for having blocked the railing. And he finally, the Bacher went to Rabbi Bechel Birnbaum, the Mashiach of MTJ, and says, this is ridiculous. This is absurd. Right? He should apologize to me at all. He's apologizing every day. This is absolutely ridiculous. So Rabbi Bechel Birnbaum said to him, go to Rabbi Yishev when he's in his office, ask him for a bracha. Rabbi Yishev will give you a bracha. He'll feel when he gives you a bracha that he's atoned for his grievous misdeed. And then he won't ask you mechila anymore. He went to the airport office and asked Rabbi Yishev for a bracha. Rabbi Yishev gave a bracha. After that, Rabbi Yishev didn't ask mechila anymore. So that's a mavra midosa. Your situations where you're absolutely right. You're right. He wronged you. He shouldn't have done it. What he did, he shouldn't have done. This is the time of year to say, you know what? I forgive him. I forgive him. Believe shalom. Believe gomor. I forgive him. That's a mavra midosa. Mavra lakop shav. The altar of Slobodka, I just have to tell you this because it's so powerful. The altar of Slobodka, in Slobodka before World War I, there's a bacher in yeshiva that made a shidduch for the bacher, a very good shidduch, a very wealthy girl, and the hainu a good shidduch, and the beautiful shidduch. And one of the other bacher in the yeshiva was jealous. So he spread rumors about this bacher, And the rumors eventually reached the ears of the future Mechut, the future father-in-law. And we heard the rumors about this prophet. He broke off the shiva. World War One broke out. The shiva got scattered. After World War One, they regrouped. And this bacher Reuven, who had this broken shiva, he came back to the yeshiva. So he came back to yeshiva. The elder said, Shalom Aleichem, come into my office. Sit down in the office. And the elder Slobodka says to the bacher, he pulls out a paper. He says to the bacher, you know what? You remember a few years back you had the broken shiva. Shimon feels bad that he broke the shiva. He wrote me a letter. He pulls out a letter. He wrote me a letter. He asked me that I should intervene on his behalf and ask Mechila for him. So Reuven says to the Alter Rebbe, I'm Michael him Belev Sholem. So the Alter says, no, listen, I know it was very painful, I know that he wronged you and he had the right to do it, you should think about it, because it's a big thing, but I'm asking, on his behalf, I'm asking Mechila. This is Rebbe, I'm telling you, I have zero tainas on him, I'm Michael him Belev Sholem. So the Alter said to him, if you're Michael Belev Sholem, that means you're being Mavir al Midosef. Kol Mavir al Midosef, Mavir al Kol Shav. You got no Averas left. That means right now you're a Tzadik Gomer. I want you to give me a bracha. You're a Tzadik Gomer, I want you to give me a bracha. Rebbe, I really can't. I want you to give me a bracha. Okay, the Alter Sobotka says, she says, okay, Hashem Yamali, Kol Mishal. He goes, no. You take both hands and put them on my head and give me a bracha. And the bacher had to give the elder of Sobotka a bracha because he held it to the tzaddik. That's a Mavir al Midosef. Can you imagine waiting in line to go for Eliyashiv or Shaila? You're waiting there for Eliyashiv or Shaila. And somebody points to you and says, oh, Rabbi Eliyashiv, this bacher over here is a Mavir al Midosef. Rabbi Eliyashiv says, really? Give me a bracha, both hands on my head right now. Can you imagine giving one of the Gedolei Yisrael a bracha, both hands on the head? The elder of Sobotka said, you're a tzaddik gomer, both hands on the head. That's a Mavir al Midosef. The person is looking for a schus right now. We're in an emergency situation. 99th minute, or whatever they call it. Right now is the time. That's a Mavir al Midosef. But there's the main issue. And the main issue is, the Gemara says that when Gemara says that when Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was on his deathbed, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was on his deathbed, and the Talmidim came in to see him. And don't worry, I'm not going to take too long. I'm just wondering why it's not here. It used to be here. The Talmidim came in to see Rabbi Lazar Gol. And he was on his deathbed. And Rabbi Elazar Gadol said, why didn't you come in while I was alive? He had been put in Cherem, so the Talmidim hadn't come in there. So the Talmidim said, we weren't available. So they made up an excuse. So Rabbi Elazar Gadol said, I wonder if they're going to die natural deaths. I wonder if you're going to die a natural death. Meaning that you're going to be died. These were the Arugia Malchus, that you're going to be died by, you're going to be killed by the Romans. So Rabbi Akiva was there and he piped up and said, and what about me? And he said, your death is going to be the worst of all. Rabbi Akiva's death is going to be the worst of all. And Rashi says, why? Because Rabbi Akiva had the most potential. Libo pasuach ulam. His heart was open. Wide open. Rabbi Akiva could have gotten so much. Rabbi Akiva said, for not being here to absorb from me, they're your death of all people. I mean, Rabbi Akiva kidarko. You always have to sense, whenever Rabbi Akiva says anything, Rabbi Akiva senses something. Why would, you can imagine somebody say, you know, you're all going to be tortured to death. Rabbi Akiva jumped up, and what about me? Rabbi Akiva obviously sensed that something was going on. He said, your death is going to be the worst of all. Because why? Because he had the greatest potential. Rabbi Akiva had the best, the most potential. Mimela, he needs the biggest kapara for having realized that potential. Everybody has heard the expression, Gedola Tshuva, Shemagas ad kisei hakavod. Tshuva is so big, tshuva reaches the kisei hakavod. No matter what you've done, you've got to turn the lights on all Shabbos. And Gedola tshuva shemagas ad kisei hakavod. Tshuva was created before my separations. Nothing stands in the way. Nothing interferes with tshuva. Gedola tshuva shemagas ad kisei hakavod. So, I've heard it said, Enachanami, that's the part of Shabbat. Gedola tshuva shemagas ad kisei hakavod. The tshuva reaches the kisei hakavod, it penetrates through all barriers. But there's more than that. Gedola tshuva, shemagasa kisei hakavod. You have to do tshuva for not reaching the kisei hakavod. person's got potential to grow, and they don't grow. It's not just turning on light switches. It's not just flicking on switches in the bathroom. A person has potential to grow, and they don't maximize that potential. That's the biggest chet of all. The word chet means to miss. The biggest chet of all is a person who misses badly. A person who's got the potential, like Rabbi Akiva, and he doesn't actualize that potential. That's gedol l'tshuva shemegas at kisei hakavod. You got to do tshuva for not having reached the kisei hakavod if you could reach the kisei hakavod. There was a rav in Yerushalayim who was walking with one of his talmidim. They're walking along, and he sees out in the distance, also years ago, he's out in the distance, there's this Arab shepherd boy, and he's got a flock of sheep. And so the rav says to the talmid, that points out, and he says, "You see what I see over there?" He looks and says, "Yeah." He says, "What? Tell me what you see." He says, "What I see, there's an Arab shepherd boy, and he's got sheep around him." He says, "Yeah, what, do you see anything unique about that?" He goes, no, what am I supposed to see? He says, "Let me ask you a question. How many sheep do you see around there?" He says, "I don't know, 100, 150, 200, I don't know, there's a lot of sheep." He says, "How many shepherds are there?" He says, "Just one." He says, "How old do you say that shepherd is?" "I don't know, 12, 13, 14, a shepherd, right there, boy, I think so." He says, "You don't see anything unique about that?" He says, "No." He says, "How many hours a day do you think that shepherd is around the sheep?" 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day. He says, "Isn't that remarkable? He's around the sheep all day long. The sheep walk on all four. He's standing on two. Don't you think that all that time being outnumbered and being around those sheep, don't you think he should be influenced and he should start crawling around on four also?" Yeah, that for a while gets to you. You're a man. Yeah, after a while, you're influenced by your surroundings. Don't you think you should start crawling around just like that? He says, in our society, we are affected by our society. Our society is a society of complacency. You ever hear people use an expression, "I'm comfortable with my level"? You ever hear people say that? "I'm happy with my level. I'm comfortable with my level." Your bonus one might not be. Says, "I'm comfortable with my level. I'm happy with my observance. I'm okay the way I am." You're comfortable? People sometimes use an expression, "It should be my biggest avera." You ever hear people say that? I saw a guy was davening after Shkia. Somebody said to me, after he said, "It should be my biggest avera." There's only one problem. It isn't his biggest avera. That's the problem. If it was Taki's biggest avera, then I'd trade places with the guy. But it wasn't his biggest avera. That's the problem. The person says, "Well, I'm happy with my level." Yeah, what about the Rebbe Shalom? What does he think of your level? What does Rabboshon think of your level? Rabboshon, he's happy with your level. You're happy. Is he happy? So first understands, we live in a society, we have to break out of that. Because the society says, yes, you've got to achieve your potential. Where? You've got to make money, and taivas, and pleasures, and everything else. And what about the real potential that we're accountable for, that we have to achieve, that we have to break through, and break through the mindset of society to realize that we have to achieve our potential. And if we don't, we have to do two, we're accountable for that. In the David Hashem Ori, it says, seems like a stira. So, Shifti Veis Hashem Ko Yimei Chayai, Lachazos V'Noam Hashem Ulevakir Beicholo. Right? So, on the one hand, it says, Shifti Veis Hashem Ko Yimei Chayai. We got to sit in the Veis Hashem. And remember, it's not just a song. Like, the song is nice, right? And, you know, we had a Rebbe once, right? Everybody's singing, Shifti, everybody's singing. And Rebbe said, hey, you know, you gotta want to do it too. Now, you gotta do it. Shifti Veis Hashem Ko Yimei Chayai. So it seems to be a stira. On the one hand, we say we want to sit in the Beis Hashem. On the other hand, it says, we want to visit. So there are a lot of people, by the way, who are in Mekai in the second half of the Pasuk. A lot of people who visit. A lot of people are in Mevakir in the Beis Hashem, they're Mevakir. What about the Shifti? And if there's a Shifti, so how do the two work together? The answer is, that in learning, especially when it comes to potential, because at the end of the day, I'm sure that your Rebbeim have told you, and the bottom line is, if you learn, you'll probably get everything right. And if you don't learn, then nothing's going to work anyway. So you got to get into the learning. Because doing tshuva and fixing things up and worrying about everything else, which we have to do. But if you haven't got the learning, it's like eating a sandwich without the bread. If you eat a sandwich without the bread is one of the great tricks of life. Eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich without the bread. And somehow it just isn't the same. So yeah, at least I took care of the peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, but you missed the bread. You missed the bread. It's a problem. You can do tshuva, you can do everything. Tshuva. Tshuva begins with sitting and learning. That's the potential. That's what Rabbi Akiva is accountable for. That's what Rosh Baruch Hu wants. Shifting Beis Hashem is, yeah, we want to sit in the Beis Hashem our entire life. But you know what? There are two ways to sit in the base of Hashem. You can sit in the base of Hashem. Is that? Yeah, is that? But the difference between a person who sits and a person who's a mevaker. You ever notice when tourists come to Yerushalayim? What do tourists look like? Tourists are wide-eyed. Wow! Yeah, I can't. Wow! You know, Malchut Yisrael. You know, wow! You know, the Kotel. Wow! You know, the wow! Everything's a wow. And the people who live here, you know, they take it all for granted. They just walk around spraying people with what do you call it, Malchut Yisrael. They don't get excited about it anymore. You got their kaisel, you drop off their kaisel. Don't get excited about it. We want shifty the base of Hashem. We want to be in the base of Hashem. But whenever we're in the base of Hashem, we want to feel that we're a mevaker in the base of Hashem. We want the excitement to be there. The problem is that we also become complacent in our learning. Yeah, no, you know, another daf and another migu and another chazaka and let's go. We want to be shifty beis Hashem, but we want to be mevaker. We want the excitement of being a mevaker every time we enter into a beis Hashem. Rav Steinman was once on a plane. Rav Arnold Steinman was on a plane. And the plane was flying from Baltimore to Toronto. They're flying to, flying from Baltimore to Toronto, and at a certain point, they flew over Niagara Falls. So everybody in the plane rushes over to the window to look over to see Niagara Falls, and Niagara Falls. And the shaman is sitting there, he's learning. So one of the guys says, Rebbe, aren't you going to look? He goes, no. But Rebbe, Niflao Sabore! So the shaman points down to his Gemara, he says, no. This is Niflao Sabore. This right here is Niflao Sabore. Person understands that's what we're trying to do. It's hard, it's difficult. We want that excitement in the base fetish, to be a mevaker every time we're in a base fetish. There's another guy who's a very wealthy man was sitting in first class, a Jewish businessman sitting in first class. And for some reason, in the middle of the flight, he had to stop in the middle of the flight. He had to go into the regular coach, in the regular what we call cattle. You know, he had to leave business for first class to go back into cattle for some reason. And he goes walking through. And he sees Rosh Shivat Mirz, that's all right, Shmuel Birnbaum, is sitting there in a seat learning in the regular seat. This guy's sitting in first class. He goes there and says, Rebbe, that's terrible. He says, Rebbe, you know, I have a seat in first class. No, let's switch. Go sit there. I'll sit over here. I said, Rosh Shivat, Shmuel Birnbaum. So Shmuel looks at him and he says, I don't need a seat in first class. I need a chavrusa. Tell the goy next to me to go sit in first class. You sit down over here. Let's learn. That's not what he was expecting, is it? I ever wish you didn't ever make the offer? Oh no, I was in the middle of a movie. One second. I'm going to watch a movie next week. See, when you get on a plane, everything's motor, by the way. When you're on a plane, you're in a no halacha zone. You know, once you get on the plane, you know, it doesn't matter where you're coming from. As soon as you step on the plane, everything becomes motor. In that little box, it's all motor. Hashem's not there on the plane with you. Everything's okay. All of a sudden, he finds out, oh, you're me. Why don't you sit down next to me and be a mevaker? Be a mevaker with your Shmuel Birnbaum. That's what we want. That's what the shifty ways of Hashem coming up. Why don't we be a mevaker? We want the niflaos of work. We want the excitement out of Torah. That's where our potential is. That's what we're going to show us till the Asad. Everything else is wonderful. Everything. Everything is wonderful. But at the end of the day, the person's not plugged into the learning. So everything else is going to have, there's going to be a certain artificiality about it. I have less than a minute to tell you something that takes 10 minutes, so I'm not going to do it. I'll just tell you one, you just have to be messiah with the thought. It's too important. At the Akedah, when Avraham Avinu takes Yitzchak up to the Akedah, it says a Medrash, the Medrash says that, I'm not supposed to do this, because I accept this a Mechila, and it's not really my Medrash, I'm asking you Mechila for going, but I'm not asking Mechila, but that Mechila, you know, because I'm going to do it anyway. So, you know, so now I have to ask you Mechila next Yom Kippur. I'm sorry. I'll take responsibility. It says the Medrash says at the Akedah that Avraham Avinu took Yitzchak, and at the last minute he's about to shechtin. So the Torah says he's about to shechtin, and the Malach says don't shechtin. So the Medrash says Avraham Avinu said to the Malach, "Should I strangle him? Could I strangle him instead?" And the Malach says, "No, don't strangle him." He says, "Well, can I at least make a cut with the knife? Can I make a cut and draw some blood?" He says, "No, don't draw any blood." He says, "So what am I going to do?" He says, "There's a ram over there." So Avraham takes the ram, chefs the ram, and each step of the way, he says, "Let this be in place of Yitzchak." And he skins it and says, "Let this be in place of Yitzchak." And then he burns it and he says, "Let this be in place of Yitzchak." That's what the Medrash says. That's a pella. It's a pella. Number one, you know, imagine what if the Malach would have said yes. Don't sheft him. Well, should I strangle him? hey, great idea. We didn't think of that up here. Yeah, yeah, strangle him. You know, how would you feel then? He called your bluff. Now what? And then what are you going to tell Sarah when you come home? Well, I got some good news and some bad news. Right? The good news is I didn't check him. Right? But the bad news is I strangled him. Why? Well, I suggested. Why did you have to suggest? Get him answered. What are you trying to tell? What's everyone trying to prove? You know, don't shut them, but I want to strangle them. What do you mean? You're trying to out tzaddik the tzaddikian? And then he suggests you want to draw blood. And then you say, well, let it be as if it's just like, instead of shadows like this, we'll say very quickly. Rav Dessler says that, you see, a person sometimes like has an inspiration. You're inspired. Avraham Avinu for 3 days, what do you think he was thinking about? For 3 days, he was thinking, I'm going to go up there, it's going to be difficult, but I'm going to do this, and I'm going to reach a certain level of Iskarvus through Yibamshalom. And at the last minute, he's told, don't do it. You know what that feels like? It's like studying for a test. And at the last minute, you walk in, you study for 3 days and 3 nights, and at the last minute, the teacher walks in and says, okay, no test, everybody gets an A. And your first reaction is, you should be happy. After all, that's what you want anyway. But there's a little disappointment because you pumped yourself up for something to achieve, and now you're not going to be able to perform. And Avraham Avinu has got himself up in a state where I'm going to shecht him, and I'm going to reach a scarbus because of my avoda, my closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to reach a level of never previously unattainable. And at the last minute, when he's all pumped up, the malach comes on and says, don't shecht him. It's like, well, could I at least, I have to do an action. So, should I strangle him? No. Can I cut him, draw some blood? No. So what am I going to do? Take the ram. And when he takes that ram, every step of the way, he's putting all of that energy into the ram. Every step of the way, he's saying, this is instead of Yitzhak. This is instead of Yitzhak. Because he wants to achieve that Iskarvus. Rav Dessler says, when a person has a Yisorus, a person has to take action. If you don't take action when you have the Yisorus, you drop, your Madrega falls. And it falls to a level that's lower than it was previously. This is the point of the year where there's a service. It can't be there. There can't be. There's not one person in this room. There isn't one person in this room who doesn't have some hisorus of some sort, either to be mischazik in learning or to be mischazik in halacha or being out of halacha. There is some area where a person has a service. A person must take action now. A person must take action. If you don't take action now, then that hisorus dissipates and a person's level drops. It shouldn't be big Kabbalahs. It should be something achievable, something you could do. It could be to learn an extra 5 minutes. It could be not to talk during Seder, not to take a shorter break, take one less break, whatever it is. Make a Kabbalah, a small Kabbalah, a little Kabbalah, something you could be Mekayim, a B'lei Neder Kabbalah, but you have to take action. And if you take action on these Orus, then a person grows, then a person's Shuvah is accepted, and then a person hears the Baskel, which Chazal say that Motzi Yom Kippur is a Baskel, says, Lechechol B'simcha Lachmecha. Go home. Go eat your bread happily. Lechevo b'simcha lachmecha. You've earned it. You deserve it. You've got a kapora. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'mezaka. All of us, we should be zocher to a gemar chasim l'tova b'schus. Our Kabbalah, our effort to take all of that inspiration, to turn it, to translate it into action. We should all be zocher to a good year.